tells us that at the age of 77, Yaakov Avinu arrived in Haran. Laban asked him what he wanted from him, and asked what he wanted to do, and Yaakov said that he wanted to marry Rachel Imenu. The suggestion was to marry Rachel Imenu. He offered to work for Laban, and to save something to Laban, and to do something for the next 7 years, and asked for those 7 years to do. That meant that he wasn't going to be able to be ready to get married until the age of 84. 77 to 84. The line that he used was, Avodcha sheva shanim b'rachol bitka ketan. That I'm going to work for you for those 7 years for Rachel, your daughter, the youngest one. And he did it. And it says, after he had done it, he was able to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, to work for those 7 years. V'yu be'inav ki yomim achodim ba'avasu osa. That in his eyes, those years, 7 years, seemed like only a few days because of his great love for her. And it went by so quickly. So all the Rishonim ask the exact same question. The Baalei Tosfos especially. How is that possible? If you want something so badly and you're waiting for something to happen, then every day should take a year. Every day you're sitting there and you're waiting for 7 years to pass, it should take even longer than you expected. It's not that every year took a day, it's the exact opposite. How could it be that it went quickly if you want to marry her that badly? That's the question that all of them ask. And it really is it's a solid question. We all know that when we're looking forward to doing something, if we know that 2 days from now something's going to happen, then the days just drag on by. But if you sit there and you're doing something that you really enjoy, then the seconds go by so fast. You have no idea what's going on. So what's the pshat that to him this was Yomim Achavim? So the Malbim gives us an insight to human nature in this puzzle. He says that when a person desires something and he can't wait for that event to happen because of his taivas, then every second that he delays or that it is delayed is torturous to him. He can't handle it. He wants it so badly to fulfill his desire, every single second is terrible for him. He can't deal with it. But that's not true when it comes to Ratzon Hashem. If he wants to do what's right in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's doing what is considered the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at that point, then every second in which you're accomplishing yet again Ratzon Hashem, every second is going by so quick. Because every second is all about, not about what's going to be, but what you have right now. What do I have right now at this second? See, if you're going to time the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single second of every single day, because of what you're doing, then it's clear you're going to be fine. But it's a problem that we want everything to be done right now because we want it. That's where we lead into problems. So the fact is, you all have to know, patience is a key to being happy. If you're not married, then you have to have patience to wait until you're ready to get married. Your perfection isn't there until you are ready to start dating. And it'll be there eventually, it's just not there yet. Until you're ready to get married, until everything is there for you. You just don't have anything there yet. For those who are married already, then there's the greatest lesson in what it means with Hilchos Nida. That you have to wait. And there's always a wait. There's always a delay in which you have to say to yourself, there's nothing I can do about it. And those days of Nida could drag on by, or that you could use them as an opportunity to understand, this is Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to have. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me to do. That's the difference. If your intention is out of desire, then it eats away at your flesh. When you know that there's something there that you can accomplish every single day by doing what you know is the right thing to do, then you're able to accomplish it, and it feels good. It feels like the days are flying by. That's what happened to Yaakov Avinu. He was doing this not out of a desire to be together with a beautiful woman, which without a question Rachel Imenu was. This wasn't a pure desire, a taiva, to be near Rachel, in which every day is torturous. Another day where I can't be together with my loved one. That's not what he's thinking. His line was, I know that Ratzon Hashem is for me to get married to Rachel Imenu. I know that the way for me to get there is for me to take 7 years in order to work my way up there. Why 7 years? That's Akasha. But 7 years to work my way up. So every single day flew by because he knew this is the right thing to do at this point. This is the great thing to be able to go. That's when things fly by. So tell me, when morning seder starts at 9:30 and you walk in 9:30, it's already 1. You walk in at 9:30, So when you're sitting there, do you think, man, this is terrible, I can't leave for the next 3 hours? Is that your thought process? Or is the thought process, this day is going to fly by? What's it like when you know that Second Seder is starting right now at 2:06? Right now it's 2:06. And you're not going to leave here until 4 o'clock or 4:30. Right? So what's it going to be like? Are you sitting to yourself, how in the world am I going to do the next 2 hours? Or is it literally going to fly by? And you have no idea how it went by so quickly. It doesn't make sense that it flew by so quickly. What's your reaction when you look up at the clock thinking, oh, for sure by now it's 12:13. And it's really 9:42. So now what? You're sitting in Shir. And you look up and you're like, oh my gosh, Shir better end soon. And it's 11:32. Now what? What's your reaction? What do you do for something like that? How can you make it that Shir and Seder fly by? That it's flying to the point where you can't believe it's gone by so fast. All I've done is a Ritzvah. How is it possible that a half hour just passed while I was doing a Ritzvah? So how does that happen? So let's take it to a different extreme. How do you picture Olam Haba? What is Olam Haba in your mind? You die after 120. Let's go according to the Rambam. You're going up to Shemayim and there's an Olam Haba waiting there for you. Something there. So what is your Olam Haba? What is it? What do you picture it as? When you close your eyes and you think, my ultimate level is what? What is it? Is it a massive beach, separated of course, although that might be Gehenna for some people, but separate beach, where you're sitting there, beautiful sand, the beautiful ocean right in front of you, a breeze coming off and yet the sun is boiling hot down on you, and you're sitting there sipping a pina colada while some guy, I'm saying not a girl, a very dressed girl, is giving you grapes, right, while you're sitting there relaxing, maybe watching on a big screen TV right in front of you, your favorite sports team, whatever championship there it could possibly be in. Is that what it is? Is that Olam Haba? Because I have a feeling that you're going to be really disappointed. That after 120 and you go up there, that might not be there. I don't want to burst your bubble. I'm just saying that that may not be the greatest Olam Haba out there. What is Olam Haba? What is the ultimate level of Olam Haba that a person is at where everything is working well? What could it be? What could that Olam Haba be? I would assume comfortable clothing is a must. Can't stand most of the clothing that most of us have nowadays. So I would assume like a silk robe. That would be good. That would be number one. I think that would be my number one no matter what. The clothing would be a big issue over there. But then what? So you got a nice little belt on top of the robe, so that would be nice. And now, you're walking around, really comfortable shoes, really comfortable ground, not hard ground, looks nice, everything is beautiful. And then you see a tremendous amount of people that are unbelievable gedolim. You stand there and you see Avraham Avinu talking to a whole group of people what it was like traveling through Eretz Yisrael and then going down to Mitzrayim, explaining what actually happened. And explain to you what was meant when the Torah says this, that, and the other, going through the entire story. And you really want to go there, but then you see on the other side, you're watching Yitzchak Avinu go through the level of the Akedah, what was going on at the Akedah, and how the Sultan was trying to stop them, but how he and Avraham Avinu were able to get around. And then you start walking over there, because that sounds really interesting. And then you see Yaakov Avinu going through what happened with the sheep. How he was able to trick Laban and be able to get all 600,000 sheep under his own possession, from 70 to 600,000. And he's going through all the different processes of what you ended up doing with the sticks and everything like that. How you stick the sticks in the water, how to make all those sheep. And he's going through that. And then he starts, that's crazy. I want to see what Yaakov Avinu is doing. But then there's a Rambam. And the Rambam is going through Hilchos Tefillah. He has a shir on Hilchos Tefillah every morning. I don't know if they're davening. There's got to be some type of tefillah. But he's going through Hilchos Tefillah. You want to go hear a shir from the Rambam himself on Hilchos Tefillah over there. Then the Ben Ish Chai is going through the Sodos of the Torah, all the secrets of the Torah, explaining everything that's happening over there in another corner. And you're standing there. You have all the information is there. Everything's right there in front of you. Every question you've ever had asked, Any question you ever could even think of and what you would never have thought of are all answered for you right there. They're all there right at your fingertips. Can you imagine? Forget about the Ben Ish-Chai talking about. Go from Shimon Bar Yochai creating a giraffe and riding it around Olam Haba. And you're sitting there like, I want to do that. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is teaching you how to ride a giraffe around Olam Haba, or create it first and then be able to ride a giraffe around Olam Haba. I mean, this is what Olam Haba is, a land of God. It's a land of where everything is clear to you, and where you know, this is my purpose, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm supposed to be. Although my first example is a great example of a vacation. Vacations get boring after a while. Nobody can live the way that they do, sitting in a hammock, sipping pina coladas, in the nice sun, with everything. You can't do that all day, every day. It gets boring. And especially if it's eternity. Then what? See, eternity is learning every single bit of Torah that's possibly out there that you could possibly understand. I would love to see Rabbi Akiva, Reb Meir, and Rabbi Yehuda, all of them get into an argument about a Mishnah in Brachos. I don't think many of us will be on that level, and we probably won't be able to hear Shir directly from them, but to at least know that they're there. And if I just go a little bit further, I could be in that Shir. I might be able to hear from the Geonim, from the Tanoim, what they were trying to say. Forget about the Tanoim, from the Nevi'im, from Moshe Rabbeinu himself, what was going on in the Torah. That's the ultimate level of Olam Haba. Now you could argue with me on this, because it's very speculative. I'm making this up as I go along, because I've never been there, and I don't know anybody that has been, so I don't have any experience in something like this. And maybe it is. Maybe when I go up to Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just going to hand me a hammock and be like, go ahead, it's right over there. Maybe that is what's going to happen. And maybe that's supposed to be it. Just doesn't seem likely, does it? It doesn't seem like that's supposed to be it. So what is it exactly? I had a really interesting experience last night. Very interesting experience last night. I left here at 10:15, around 10:15, something like that, after the Vod was over. And I got into my car, and because I knew that the Bears were playing in a game last night, Monday Night Football, so I decided, okay, I'll just listen to the game on the way home. So I turned on the radio, and I listened, and it was the fourth quarter, and they're up by 4 points, and they have the ball with 9 minutes left, something like that, around 9 minutes left. And I was so impressed. I was like, oh my gosh, I thought they were going to lose by 140, but it turns out that if you have a defense that just kills the other team's quarterback, then you can win a game. So that makes sense. You should just take a gun to the game. I think that's a lot easier. But you go ahead. So I realized that I was listening, and as I was listening, I was hearing what was going on, and it was exciting. So around the time that it hit Skokie Boulevard was a first down where there was a running player. Something. Around second down was about the time when I got to Crawford. I just drive that fast. So second down was at Crawford. And by that time, it was already something new. I don't remember what happened. Either there was a passing play or something didn't work well. Third down, I'm at McCormick, right? I made every green light. I'm standing right there. And then fourth down, fourth and inches, on the Bears' own 32-yard line. Fourth and inches. And I'm sitting there like, oh man, this is unbelievable. And I make a left onto Kedzie. And I know that my wife is giving a challah class right at that moment. So I knew that I wasn't going to be learning in my normal spot. I also knew that I had a lot to do that night. So I was like, all right, well, I have like 5 minutes. I really want to just, to be honest, I wanted to go to my parents' house to just go watch the last 4.5 minutes of the game, or however many minutes left were in the game. But I said to myself, all right, I'm not going to go to my parents' house, right? Because it's not going to be 4.5 minutes. It's 4.5 minutes in the game, which means like 150 minutes in sports time, right? So I said, you know what? I'll just sit in my car and I'll see what happens in fourth and inches. And if they make it, great. And if not, they don't. So then I said to myself, ugh, it's so ridiculous. What am I doing sitting in my car? What am I doing? I'm sitting in my car to go hear what's going to happen on fourth and inches. And as they're about to start the play, turn off the radio, turn off my car, right? And I go inside the house. I go inside the house and I walk in. And yeah, of course, there's a bunch of girls sitting around the table giggling because that's what they do. And I decide, all right, I'm not going to be able to learn here. I go into the den. And I go sit down in the den and I start learning like I'm supposed to, right? And I go sit down. And then a half hour later, I decided, you know what? I really should know whether or not they got it. And it turned out they won. Well, they told me they won. It worked out really, really well. Okay? Maybe because I did that, maybe that's it. I was the reason why. And that's the end of the schmooze. Now that would be amazing, right? That would be absolutely amazing. At the end of the day, I looked at myself and I said to myself, what are my goals in life? Are my goals to find out what happens to the Bears if it's fourth and inches with 9.5 minutes in a meaningless game in the middle of the season? Is that really what my goal is? Because that's a pathetic goal. That is not a goal. Now, granted, maybe that's not a goal. That just might be the means to an end. My end goal, of course, is to be able to get to the highest level of Olam Haba that I can possibly get. But I certainly need a break. And during that break, why not spend that break doing this instead of doing something else? I hear that. That does make sense. There's an idea behind that. And that does make a little bit of sense. But all it takes is a little bit of thought. You just use your brain for a little bit. You say to yourself, is this Kedai or is it not Kedai? And that doesn't mean that you should always turn off every game or that you shouldn't listen to anything or do nothing. If you have something else to do, which we all do at some point, right? We sit there and we say to ourselves, is it worth it for me to do this or is it not worth it for me to do this? A thought process. At least allow the thought process to go through. So many people live their lives without even thinking what their goal is in life, where they want to get to in life. At the end of the day, had I waited in that car and I would have heard it, what would have happened? I would have been like, yes. And now what? And then I probably would have stayed a little bit longer. Then I would have stayed a little bit longer. And then what? And then what? I would have wasted a half an hour or 40 minutes of my time. Made me stay up a half an hour or 40 minutes later to finish what I was supposed to accomplish. And for what? For what? At what point do we say to ourselves, this isn't worth it? Granted, there are times where that comes into play, but there are other times where you have to say to yourself, no. See, here's how time flies. When you have a goal, and you see clearly how what you're doing right now is accomplishing that goal, how it's allowing yourself to get better and better and better to get to that end point, then you know time is going to fly. But when your goal is something different from what you're doing right now, my goal is not to become a massive Talmud Chacham. My goal is to be successful in life, be very good in Parnassa, and to give money for other people to go learn. Then of course it's going to be torturous to learn for 3 hours in the morning. And of course when you look at the clock, it's going to show you that it's 9:52 instead of 11:48. Of course it's going to be that way. Because that's not your goal. Your goal in life is to make money. So this is just wasting your time for what your real end goal is. What do you expect? Of course it's going to be that way. When you sit there and you know that there's Tachnon on Monday and Thursdays, and you're hoping beyond hope that somebody had a bris that you didn't know about, and you're sitting there at the very beginning, and all of a sudden you hear the Chazon say, "Hurrah, boom," and you're like, ah, how could I have missed that? If your end goal is that you don't want to daven, that you want to get through things as quickly as possible and just float your way through life, then of course, "Hurrah, boom" is torturous. It's 4.5 pages of the biggest torture, the worst Chinese water torture you could possibly imagine. But if the point of the Urachim is to make you into a better person, to start saying to yourself that you can do this, that there's something there to the Urachim, that's part of your goal of being a better person, of being a Talmud Chacham, then it goes like nothing, like water. You fly through it. Most people run through the Urachim anyway. This, you'll actually say it, and it'll still run through it. That's the way it's going to feel. See, it should be that 11:30 should come around, and when people look up at you and say, it's time to go to Shir, you go like, no way, Shir already? That's the way it should be. Not, all right, Shir's in 20 minutes, I'm going to take a little bit of a break. That shouldn't be it. That's not an answer. That's against everything that you should be trying to do here. To get out of things early, to make sure that your time is wasted, so that it's not spent sitting there and looking inside, that completely destroys your end game. Should destroy your end game. That's the way a person should be thinking. See, it'd be great to contemplate and think of an Olam Haba where your roommates are, I don't know, I'm just taking some random guys that have died over the years. Your roommates are going to be Jim Belushi and Michael Jackson and John Candy and Chris Farley. It'll probably be funny for about 5.5 minutes. You'll get a couple jokes in and everything like that. But is that really who you want your roommates to be like? That's going to be your roommates? That's what you want? Can you imagine? I mean, I can't imagine that it's going to smell very nice. I can't imagine that it's going to be very nice after a while. It's a nice idea. It's a nice break. But that's not the end game. That's not the goal. That's not what you strive for. That's not what you should be working for. So what is it? And if you really want something, if you yourself can't make the decision, you can't do it. I don't know what my end goal is. I don't know what I really want for myself. Maybe I want to be a Talmud. Maybe I don't want to be a Talmud. Maybe I want that. Tell me, what do you want your kids to be? Do you want your kids to be like you? Do you want your kids to go through the same mistakes that you've gone through? Do you want your kids to have the same issues in learning and in davening that you have? Or do you want your kids to be on a higher level than you are? And if you tell me that you want your kids to be less than you, or just equal to you, then you've never had kids before. You've never had kids. Because everybody wants their kids to be greater than them. Everyone wants their kids to be on a higher level than where they're at. Well, if you're narcissistic, then you shouldn't have kids. Everybody wants their kids above that level. So if you want your kids above that level, how are you going to get there? You think it's going to happen by you wasting your time, by you hating learning, by you not wanting to daven? Then your kids miraculously are going to want to daven. They're going to want to learn. They're going to be okay with it. How do you think it's going to happen? This doesn't happen overnight. I realize that. But to realize what your goal is and start thinking about where I'm going and what I'm doing to make it better is so important. Nothing else should come into play here. That will help you understand what your 3 hours of morning seder and your 2.5 hours of second seder are. That will help you understand why you shouldn't be leaving at 3:40 or 3:30 or 3:20. That's the reason why. Because that's not part of your goal. That doesn't define who you are. It should be at the earliest 4 o'clock. But if you really knew yourself, you would go until 4:30. But you know that there's some other reason why you can't be there. And even then, is that your end goal? What is your end goal? Is the end goal to be able to get an A in philosophy? Or is your end goal to be able to say to yourself, I learned when I was in yeshiva? What's your goal? That's what it has to be looked at. And it goes with that. That means that when you're sitting there, it's not going to be, I got to study during second Seder. No, I'm going to lose an hour of sleep because I got to go to second Seder tomorrow. So when else can I study? I've got to lose an hour of sleep in order to study. That's it. There's no other answer to that question. But if your end goal is just, I'm going to get an A on the test, then of course, miss second Seder. Miss morning Seder. Don't be here. I don't understand. There are easier colleges. I don't think too many, but there are. There's got to be one or two. I'm sure they're out there. A community college somewhere, I'm sure, would be on a lower level. Just think. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was approached by one of his enemy's kids. The man was brandishing a gun. Went up to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, and Rabbi Yosef Chaim bared his chest and said, shoot, I'm ready to meet my maker. Are you ready to meet your maker? Are you ready for today to die and go up to Shemayim? What are you ready to do? Is there any point where you think you could get there to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, I'm proud of my accomplishments? Or at least, even though I could have done more, I did what I thought I could and I'm working hard. I was working hard and then that happens. That's the way we should be. Working hard for that goal. And that should somewhat explain a part of this strife that's going on in Eretz Yisrael. I don't deal with politics, and I don't deal with those types of things, and I don't like talking about them, and I'm not going to. There's a lot of religious issues going on in Eretz Yisrael. If everybody realized what their end goal was, and what everybody's end goal is, they would understand that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and even if he made a decision, his end goal is for Kavrat Oro. No matter what he said or what he did that's against your philosophy, nonetheless, Aaron Lichtenstein is making a decision. He's a Gadol B'Yisrael who's learning Torah. To say about a person that their Torah is not roi, that their Torah is not worthy, that maybe they were a Gadol back then, but they're no longer a Gadol, it's ridiculous what people think. But if you don't have an end goal, and if you don't know what your goal is, you don't know what you're doing with life, then of course you're going to make silly decisions like that. You're going to say silly things. Make a goal for yourself. Know what it is. And let it be a solid goal. Make it something that works. Something that counts. And if you know what that is, your life should be leading up to that point. And yes, you can have, there's going to be diversions. There's going to be things that are going to send you off. But get yourself back on track and know what you got to do when you have to do it and do it. And if you have that goal, then you have something that will make your life go so quick where all of a sudden you're 34 years old and you have no idea where any of the time went. That's the way it should be. Everything should be good.